It is hour number two of Midday with Trey and BK. We wrap it up at 12:45 with our NFL roundup. And shooting the bull at 12:30, guy kills wife after she mocked his erectile dysfunction. Could be an impromptu edition of guess that state, maybe? I don't know. And in mere minutes, we're talking Cowboys with Jerry, having more to say about Jason Garrett as his head coach. I'm Trey Elling. Behind the glass today, it's the Horns fantasy sports expert and one-time gigolo, Adam Wagner. And we do have Brad Kellner sitting across from me. Give us a text at 337-3776. That's the Specs text line. And follow us on Twitter at Brad Kellner, at NotTheFakeWags, and at CourtesyWaveBK.
All right, Trey. Jerry Jones, the owner and general manager of the Dallas Football Cowboys, was on 105.3 The Fan this morning up in Big D for his weekly visit. And he was asked about Jason Garrett, the head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. And this is a real quote from Jerry Jones from this morning.
Oh, boy.
Keep in mind, the Dallas Cowboys have lost three in a row and are coming off of an embarrassing loss to the previously winless, New York Jets. Jerry Jones this morning said, quote, Jason Garrett has evolved into what I think is a top coach. He would be very sought after if he was on the open market.
End no.
Quote. He's evolved into what I think is a top coach. He would be very sought after if he was on the open market. End quote. Perhaps that's a little bit more what Jerry sounds like. Those are two groundbreaking sentences right there. Earth-shattering. Make you want to pull your hair out. Not just the hair on top of your head, but your eyebrows and all the hairs on your body. Quotes from Jerry Jones right there. Let's start with the first sentence. Jerry Jones said Jason Garrett has evolved into what I think is a top coach. You can use a lot of words to describe the Jason Garrett era in Big D. And you can use a lot of words to describe Jason Garrett as a head coach in the National Football League.
Hold on, guys.
The word evolved is not something that you can use when talking about Jason Garrett. Nothing has evolved. Nothing has changed with the Dallas Cowboys in the Jason Garrett era, especially on the offensive side of the football. We were teased for three games this year. We thought finally the Cowboys would have come to the times and joined 2019, the modern evolution of NFL offenses. We thought something had finally changed with Kellen Moore calling the plays, but we were all mistaken. As the last 3 weeks, the Cowboys have devolved, or they've really just been what they've been for the entirety of the Jason Garrett era since he took over as head football coach of this team.
Yeah, he's treading water, because evolution implies greater achievement. And this football team has not achieved much more. I guess you can argue that they've won a couple of division titles in the last 3 years, but they were doing that previously. So, yes, evolving, that's not the right word to use with Jason Garrett. Treading water, maybe not devolving necessarily, because they haven't gotten much worse. They have remained decent with no semblance of postseason success other than a win over a Seattle team last year that was very beatable in the first round of the playoffs.
And there's been a couple of playoff wins for Jason Garrett since 2010, since he took over, but there hasn't been a whole lot of evolving, and there's nothing that I've seen from Jason Garrett this year or in the last couple of years that is telling me that he is a better coach. How about the second part of that statement from Jerry Jones? He would be very sought after if he was on the open market. By whom? I don't think Jason Garrett would be offered an offensive coordinator job in the NFL right now, let alone a head coaching gig. Does Jerry mean the CFL? Does he mean the XFL? Take it over for Bob Stoops? What does he mean by that? There is no one in their right mind. Now, hell, there's organizations like the Redskins who exist who clearly are not in their right mind. But no NFL team that wants to win and be successful would consider Jason Garrett as a head coach right now.
I could see Dan Snyder going the petty route of hiring Jason Garrett just to smite Jerry Jones, but that's about it.
Yeah, that's not the team you want to give credence to right now.
And let's take it beyond head coach or offensive coordinator. I'd be hard-pressed to think that television networks would actually want to bring Jason Garrett aboard as an analyst.
No, he's the most boring guy out there.
Yes.
And you have to assume he's a little less robotic around his team than what he is in front of the podium, in front of the media.
He does have a decent rep as a guy who can inspire his players to do well. But then again, we also saw that guy try and dole out high fives after his defense made a big stand on Sunday and everybody snubbed him.
So there was a real quote from Jerry Jones this morning on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. Asked about Jason Garrett. He said, quote, "He's evolved into what I think is a top coach. He would be very sought after if he was on the open market." Now, Trey, I present this question to you. Do you think there's a chance that maybe the message preached by Red Jay is starting to fall on deaf ears for the Cowboys a little bit? You mentioned that play, that video that's kind of gone viral late in the fourth quarter when the Cowboys were coming back on Saturday after they forced a three and out and forced a Jets punt when they were down by eight to get the ball back with 3.5 minutes to go. There's a video of Jason Garrett kind of sticking his hands out to give high fives to the Cowboys players running off the field, and like three or four of the players just run right by him. Like they clearly see they clearly see their coach. They clearly see that his hands are out, and they just don't even acknowledge him. You don't do that to your boss, man. Your boss is, if you see your boss in public or in anywhere, he sticks out his hand, you're going to shake his hand if you want to keep your damn job. And three or four of the Dallas Cowboys players just ran right by Jason Garrett. And the optics of that are not very good. And that brings me to the question, is there a chance that the message for Jason Garrett, probably a similar message that he's preached for the last decade, game in and game out, is there a chance that that message is starting to fall on deaf ears and the Cowboys just don't care about it anymore?
I think it's a great possibility, BK. My goodness, that was such a cringeworthy reaction by Jason Garrett, too. After they all snubbed him, he turns around and tries to start talking to his microphone, but the look on his face is one of a guy who has clearly lost the respect of at least a couple of dudes that he relies on to help him coaching that football team. And it is one of those things that I think you're right. It is starting to fall on deaf ears, and I feel like we heard Jerry say something very similar last year early in the season where the Cowboys were slow out of the gates. But then Jerry, very soon after that, at the end of the Texans game, I feel like it was the same week as a matter of fact, so Jerry gives a vote of confidence as Jason Garrett has done a great job of evolving and he's a great head coach and he would be very wanted on the market. And then that very next week, we saw them lay that egg versus the Texans where Garrett was not taking any sort of risks. He was basically playing not to lose versus trying to win. And after that game, Jerry Jones actually came out and revealed his true feelings. I feel like if we see the Cowboys suck it up versus the Eagles on Sunday night, something similar may go down in that regard.
Yeah, big game. And it almost feels like the beginning of the end for the Jason Garrett era in Dallas. Now, I will remind everybody that the Cowboys were 3-5 last year before the bye week. And they traded for Amari Cooper. They won 7 of the last 8 games. They win the NFC East. They win a playoff game. Jason Garrett keeps his job. So the season is not completely over for the Dallas Cowboys. They're 3-3 right now. They were 3-5 last year and still made the playoffs. And the Eagles are 3-3. I mean, this division is up for grabs right now. The Giants and Redskins aren't very competitive. The Eagles are the only team you're going up against, and right now they're just .500 as well. So I don't know if you're going to get a head coaching move in the middle of the season unless something drastic happens, like the Cowboys end up 3-8 or 3-9 or something like that. But I don't know. I mean, this is a young enough team to where maybe they haven't heard Jason Garrett's message enough. But and it feels like they're playing for their coach still. They still like the guy enough to play for him. We saw it last year, right? They could have mailed it in last year when they were 3-5. They knew their coach was on the hot seat, and they rallied around him and played well. Maybe that happened again. I don't know with this football team. I don't know what's happening because the last 3 weeks, they've looked as bad as you could possibly look, especially in the first half. Like, they're not scoring points. Last year's Cowboys, the issue was the third quarter. Right, they'd get big leads going into halftime, and they would get so conservative in the third quarter that they'd let other teams come back into ball games and end up winning some of those games. This year, the Cowboys are one of the best third quarter teams in the NFL. They've got more third quarter points than anybody in the league, but they're getting off to such sluggish starts. Even in the Miami game, they were only up 10-6 at halftime in that game against the Dolphins. Since then, they have not scored more than 6 points in a first half. I don't know what's happening with this football team right now.
You floated this idea yesterday, BK, and it could prove to be true over time that it feels like Jason Garrett has asked Kellen Moore to rein things in just a little bit, not do as much of what we saw them having early season successes with. And it really did start in the Miami game where it almost felt like they were starting to get a little bit arrogant with what they were doing on offense in the first half of that game. Dak had a couple of careless throws where it's like, I'm just going to trust my receiver here despite the fact that there are two or three guys surrounding him. And at that point, Jason Garrett examines things and he says to himself, I don't want these guys' heads to get too big, so we're actually going to rein things back in and gradually we'll reopen things back up over the course of the next month or so. The problem, though, is they haven't opened things back up yet, and on top of that, they're down a couple of key weapons now. It looks like Amari Cooper not going to be with the Cowboys for the Philly game this weekend. That's obviously a big deal, especially because Michael Gallup and Dak Prescott are still trying to get back on the same page that we saw them doing such a great job with in the preseason and through the first couple of games of the season.
Yeah, this offense is heavily reliant on Amari Cooper. You could make a strong argument that he's the third most important player on this team behind Dak Prescott and Tyron Smith. I think Amari's right there behind those two dudes. This offense just loses it without their number one wide receiver on the field. And I'm glad you brought that up, Trey. I'm glad you brought that up, that the Cowboys have kind of changed offensively. This is from the broadcast on Sunday, the CBS broadcast. It was Nance and Romo on the call. And this is what Tony Romo said that has had a lot of Cowboys fans up in arms. Now, I think Tony Romo meant this as a positive thing, but Cowboys fans took it as a very negative thing, and I think they're right. Here's Tony.
And a lot of it's because they're trying to throw the ball down the field and get it, and they are. I would like to see them get a little more situational as far as on the road, pressure times, if not. They've had a lot of success. Jason Garrett and Kellen Moore. I see a lot of Jason Garrett's footprints in this offense. I actually think not everyone sees it, but this is going back to an 07-09, and it's really
second and 11. And
ooh.
So Tony Romo, during the CBS broadcast, said, I see a lot of Jason Garrett's footprints on this offense. Now, Romo meant that as a good thing, because he alluded to 2007 and 2009, which were two of the best offensive years in Cowboys franchise history. But Cowboys fans, and I think rightfully so, took it as, this is a problem. Jason Garrett's footprint should not be on this offense. We want to see what Kellen Moore gave us in the first 3 weeks of the season. And it almost feels like, yeah, there was some sort of conversation where Jason Garrett or ownership went to Kellen Moore and said, yeah, all this play action stuff, all this pre-snap motion, all of this throwing on first down, it's cute and all, but let's rein it in a little bit. Let's go back to do what we do. Let's play old school smash mouth football. And I tweeted this out on Sunday, Trey.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Dallas Cowboys offensively right now are more focused on justifying Zeke Elliott's contract than they are in winning football games. It makes no sense that they have gone away from throwing on first down, which they did so successfully for the first 3 weeks of the season. And Stephen Jones, in an interview after the game on Sunday, said, oh, we usually win when Zeke Elliott gets 30 or more touches.
That's true.
Ruh-roh. But that's not what I want to hear these days in the NFL.
No, you're right.
I don't want this team to be so focused on getting Zeke to that 30-touch number because it's worked decently well in the past. I want them to modernize their offense and go back to what they were doing in the first 3 weeks. And can I give you some numbers, Trey?
Please do.
26 first downs that the Cowboys earned on Sunday against the Jets. They ran on 17 of those 26 for a total of 50 yards. They averaged 2.9 yards per carry on first down runs. That is not quantified as a successful play. On passes on first downs on Sunday against the Jets, they averaged 6.6 yards on first down. And if you include pass interference penalties, that was 8.1 yards per first down pass. That's double or triple the number of yards they were picking up on first down when they threw the ball versus running the ball. Yet for some reason, time and time again on Sunday, even when they were down 21-6 at halftime, they just continued to pound the rock with Zeke. I know he picked up 100 yards, but man, they needed to change that offensive game plan.
But that wasn't an efficient 100 yards,
no,
though. Look
you're
at
right.
how many carries it took him to get to that point. Yes, he had the touchdown as well, but I'm fully on board with what football has become in 2019, including at the NFL level now, where you're seeing teams, successful teams, throw it 60% of the time versus the 40% where they are actually handing the football off.
I don't think Dak Prescott is a liability anymore. I don't know if he ever really was a liability, but I think he's good. I think you can trust him enough to go out there and make these throws. We've seen that this year from this football team. Hell, you could argue Dak played a pretty decent game on Sunday.
He was throwing high in the first half, but he was far from the biggest problem for that offense.
I mean, he was running for his life. I can't remember a game in which Dak Prescott got hit as much as he did. Maybe the Falcons game a couple of years ago when Zeke was suspended and Tyron Smith was hurt when Adrian Claiborne had six sacks by himself. But Dak was running for his life and made some good plays. There were drops. There were struggles up front. The defense obviously couldn't get the job done. But yeah, man, I hear these quotes from Jerry and Steven, and I just see what the Cowboys have done on offense the last 3 weeks. I don't know how I can be confident in this team moving forward. And you think about what Tony Romo said. You think about what Sam Darnold said about how he knew what the Cowboys were doing defensively. You go back to the Rams playoff game last year where the Rams said they knew what the Cowboys were doing defensively. It's just vanilla. It's very stale. And it's gotten old. And it's not evolved, which is what Jerry Jones said Jason Garrett is doing as a head coach. Nothing has evolved. It is all so predictable. We thought maybe that would change through the first 3 weeks, but it's gotten back to what it has been.
Is this defense also getting predictable? You read the quote off from Sam Darnold yesterday, and it does seem like the defense, while they haven't necessarily been the biggest issue at times in this three-game losing streak, they did more than hold their own versus a Saints team that isn't great on offense necessarily right now with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback. They were a big part of the problem the following week versus the Green Bay Packers. And you see what Sam Darnold had to say after the game on Sunday, where they knew they had to throw the football. They knew what their safeties were going to do, and they obviously executed that game plan as well. How much of the onus falls on the defense right now?
Yeah, the Jets, and I know they were playing without Sam Darnold for three of their four games, but they only had two offensive touchdowns all season through 4 weeks. They had three offensive touchdowns in the first half against the Hot Boys, the Dallas Cowboys, the Hot Boys as they call themselves. The defense is a problem, man. I mean, I know they held the Jets to 3 points in the second half, but that's all the Jets needed to get because they were so good offensively in that first half. And the Cowboys are just not forcing turnovers defensively. That is their biggest problem. They're not giving up a crazy amount of points outside of the Green Bay game. They're not giving up a lot of points. They're not giving up a ton of yards either. But this is the craziest stat. Through six games, the Cowboys are the only team in the NFL that has not started a single drive in opponent's territory.
Wow.
The average of the other 31 teams in the NFL is 5.9 drives starting inside of their opponent's territory.
So on average, teams have had six drives that have started in the opponent's territory through six games.
And the Cowboys have zero of them. So that's one a week, basically, for every other team on average in the National Football League. The Cowboys want to be considered an elite defense. You are not an elite defense if you are not creating takeaways.
Hard to win football games when you are losing the field position battle like that.
Yeah. No doubt about it. I mean, hell, Texas saw it against Oklahoma on Saturday, right? The Longhorns had terrible starting field position. Oklahoma seemingly was starting around the 40 or midfield on every possession. That is just such a benefit to your offense.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question. Have you seen DeMarcus Lawrence? You? Wags? Anybody seen DeMarcus Lawrence?
Conspicuously absent.
Is he next in line of the guy to get a huge paycheck and just disappear from this football team?
Dude, he and Byron Jones, and I don't necessarily pin it all on the contract. Obviously, Byron Jones hasn't gotten that deal yet, but both those guys missing as much time as they did with off-season surgeries, they are slow to get up to speed for what they need to be playing at to help this defense out.
And they just look bad. Everybody outside of Robert Quinn looks bad on this defense.
Yeah,
it's
even
a good
the
thing
linebackers.
They have Robert. Yeah, Jalen Smith looks lost.
Van Der Esch, too, he's getting juked out of his shoes every week now.
It is crazy. I don't know what happened. This was one of the most elite defenses in the National Football League last year. You know, through three games, they were showing signs of some wear and tear. They were showing signs that they weren't as dominant, but it has really fallen apart over the last 2 weeks in the game against the Packers and the game against the New York Jets. So there you go. There's some Cowboys postmortem from Jets 24, Cowboys 22. Dallas is 3-3, and you've got Jerry Jones still defending his head coach, saying that he has evolved into what I think is a top coach, and he would be very sought after on the open market. Hey, the XFL draft is going on right now. You think, can we get Jason Garrett in there? In the XFL players draft, which is happening right now?
They don't want him either.
I don't think Bob Stoops would hire. You see who his offensive coordinator is, by the way?
No, who?
Hal Mumme. Is the offensive coordinator of the Dallas Renegades.
I saw that
we're winning the championship next year, baby.
I saw that Mark Trestman is the head coach of the Tampa franchise.
Yikes, they are losing the championship next year, baby.
Dude still looks like Skeletor.
Oh, man. So there you go. We'll take your thoughts, Cowboys fans. Specs text line 337-3776. We're going to talk to Ari Temkin on Thursday of this week. He's celebrating the Jewish holiday of Sukkot. Trey, so he had to take care of his kids. His kids were off of school today celebrating Sukkot. I know that's your favorite holiday, right? You're a big Sukkot guy.
Suck it.
No, it's Sukkot, man.
I think we call it suck it around here.
Who's we?
You know.
I'm the one Jew in the Sea of Gentiles here. I call it Sukkot. It's my holiday. I get to determine what the name is. My people do.
Apparently the Gentiles call it
that. You call it suck it?
I think it's
S-U-K-K-O-T. Sukkot.
Suck it.
No I in there.
Suck it.
No C in there. There's
suck
no I in there.
It.
Oh, Sukkot or suck it. That's what Ari Temkin is celebrating today, so we'll have to talk to him on Thursday.
And he's a Kansas alum, too.
The disrespect for my people continues around these parts. Unreal. All right, it's Midday with Trey and BK. The Specs text line 337-3776. Your thoughts on America's team. What is going on with the Dallas Cowboys? Can this team save the season after three straight losses? By the way, only two times in the history of the Cowboys have they had a three-game losing streak and gone on to make the playoffs. 1998, the first year of Chan Gailey. 1979, the last year of Roger Staubach. It is Midday with Trey and BK. Our man Wags will lead us through Tinder Time, some of the other sports headlines from around the world. And in Shooting the Bull today, make sure you listen to some of our low-T commercials before you do this to your significant other. That's next.
Back here on Midday with Trey and BK.
Is this more 90s?
Yeah.
What do I have to do to get you to stop playing 90s music?
Dude, Max? I've been thinking of the worst 90s songs that I could think of.
Who is this?
You're doing a good job.
Incubus.
Wait a second. You're saying Fuel and Incubus are bad
these
90s
songs,
music?
These particular songs. Looking back on them, I thought they were tokens of our generation, but apparently I was misguided.
They are not
y'all's
that bad.
Generation is worse than the millennials,
they
man.
Are not.
Although well, a lot of people who grew up in the 90s are considered millennials as well.
There is an argument to be made about us versus millennials and which generation is worst. I don't disagree with you on that one, BK. Hey, the Horn is partnering with Randall's to give you tickets to the UT Kansas game this Saturday at DKR. Chad and Kevin will be live at Randall's at Breaker and Research this Thursday for you for your chance to win from 3 to 7. And don't forget, we're upgrading two of the four winners to the Ultimate VIP Fan Experience. Kind of sucks that you're screwing the other two people out of the VIP fan experience. All seriousness, so that is a really cool opportunity for two of the four people who win tickets to UT Kansas this Saturday. Find out details at hornfm.com or visit the Horn Facebook events listing for more info.
Do want to give this little nugget involving a University of Texas commit, one of the best high school football players in Central Texas, and really in the entire country. Lake Travis quarterback Hudson Card is likely out for the remainder of his senior season due to a foot injury that he suffered in Lake Travis's 26-25 victory over Westlake in the Battle of the Lakes on Friday.
That's a bummer.
So that is a bummer for him. He is, of course, Texas bound. He's a senior at Lake Travis, so he'll be on the 40 acres next year. But, yeah, it appears that Hudson Card, the starting quarterback for Lake Travis, one of the best football teams in Central Texas, is done for the year with a foot injury.
Horns up for future Longhorn Hudson Card.
No doubt about that. It is Midday with Trey and BK. It's about 12:30. We've got a couple of bits to get to. First, let's toss it to our man Wags. It is Tinder Time.
Spons up.
Tinder Time brought to you by Altstadt Brewery. Altstadt Beer. It is German beer made here and the best beer that you can find in Central Texas. Maybe on your way home from work today for these two postseason baseball games. Pick up a six-pack of Altstadt beer. No impurities, no regrets.
Wags, hit us with the headline, please.
Return of the Hicks.
Return of the Hicks. New season of Letterkenny? Swipe right?
I don't know what Trey's talking about, but I'm a Hicks guy. I'll swipe right.
Aaron Hicks returns to the Yankees lineup for Game 3. It's his first time in the lineup since August 3rd. However, they will not be without their slugger, Giancarlo Stanton. Guys, do you give the pinstripes any for game three.
They will not be without, or they will be without?
They will be without Giancarlo Stanton, but they will have Hicks.
Yeah, sure, the Yankees have a chance. Not a great chance, considering that they're going up against Garrett Cole, a guy who hasn't lost a game since about 2011.
Severino on the bump for the Pinstripes.
Severino is on the bump for New York, and he is somebody that this team has needed all year long. They finally got him back with about a month left in the season. But, look, it's baseball. Anything can happen. And eventually Garrett Cole does have to lose a game. You imagine if it does happen, it's in the playoffs. For Astros fans' sake, I hope that's not the case. For a Rangers fans' sake, like myself, I hope it's tonight.
Garrett Cole has been extremely dominant all year long. He hasn't lost a start since the month of May. It's been ridiculous. But Garrett Cole has been more dominant at home. Both of his playoff starts, in which he was dominant. Sorry for not going to the source on that. I'm using the word dominant a lot, but we're using dominant again here. He's been more dominant at home, and both of his two playoff starts against the Rays, in which he was dominant, were at Minute Maid Park. So we'll see if his stuff can translate on the road, number one, but also outside, number two, at Yankee Stadium. I still think he's going to be really good. I would still give the Astros the edge in this game.
Do you think he's going to be dominant?
And in this series, I think he's going to be dominant. I think he'll be pretty damn dominant, man. And the Yankees strike out a whole hell of a lot more than the Rays do. Garrett Cole was able to get, 25 strikeouts in two starts against the Devil Rays?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'd give the Astros the edge, even if Giancarlo Stanton was in the lineup. But that's obviously a huge blow to the Yankees. You know, Giancarlo Stanton has been hurt for the majority of this season, but we know what he's capable of when he's in that lineup. They're going to need him back at some point in this series.
I feel like it would be a bigger loss for them right now if they hadn't made it through most of the year, being a really good offense minus his services.
Yeah, we'll see what Aaron Hicks has. He did come in relief as a defensive replacement and a pinch hitter in game two. He was 0-for-1. That guy's a heck of a player, but he's got a big-time elbow injury with his throwing arm, so we'll see how effective he can be both in the lineup and on the field. But yeah, the Yankees have weapons, and you're right. They've been pretty damn good without Giancarlo Stanton throughout the season.
Man, I'm not crazy about bringing a guy back who really hasn't had consistent at-bats for months.
What do you do?
Into a game of this magnitude.
Well, they'd obviously rather have Stanton in there, but he can't play. Dealing with the hamstring injury.
We'll piggyback off the ALCS and go into the NLCS real quick, gents. The Redbirds and the Nationals real quick. Who do you like? It could be an elimination game as well.
Yeah, it could be over. There's only been one team in the history of postseason baseball to come back from a 3-0 series deficit. That, of course, the 0-4 Red Sox against the Yankees in the ALCS. Patrick Corbin for the Nats. Man, I think this is over.
Over.
And nothing I've seen from the Cards bats over three games gives me any hope that they've got a chance to really make this a series. And if we're being honest, I'm not hoping that this becomes a series. I hate those bastards. I hate the Cardinals. Always have. Always will. I hope they get embarrassed tonight like they have been embarrassed through the first three games of this NLCS.
Nats have turned it on at the right time. They are a fun, fun team to watch.
Would you give them a shot against the ALCS winner with what you've seen out of them so far in this playoffs?
No question, because they have a really good lineup and they have the starting pitching to match. Maybe not quite match what Houston rolls out there, but they have really good starting pitching too.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Strasburg, very, very impressive. Perhaps dominant, even. Last night in the Game 3 win for the Natties. All right, good stuff, Wags. There is Tinder Time brought to you by Altstadt Beer. Yes, two CS postseason games today. The Strohs and the Yanks start a little after 3 o'clock. And then after that, it'll be the Nationals hosting the Cardinals with a chance to win the pennant in the National League. All right, it's midday with Trey and BK, about 12:35 on a Tuesday, which means it is time to shoot the bull.
Shooting the bull.
Shooting the Bull, sponsored by Audiovisual Consultations.
Yes, sir. AVConsultations.com, the website, 255-8678. The phone number to call to get the home TV setup of your dreams. We are in the midst of the best sports month of the calendar year. Hopefully you already have your TV setup done right with AV Consultations. But if not, it's the perfect time to call our buddy Tom McKay and AV Consultations to get that home theater setup or that epic man cave feel, whatever it is, TV-wise, surround sound-wise, that you've always dreamed of. AV Consultations can make it happen. It's a lot easier than you think. Give them a call, 255-8678.
All right, BK, you have today's Shooting the Bull story.
Indeed.
And it sounds grisly.
Indeed, indeed. We head over to the ex-mother country. It'd be England, where 51-year-old David Pomfret,
terrible last name,
has been sentenced to life behind bars for killing his spouse, Anne-Marie Pomfret. The British Barclays Bank executive, David Pomfret, beat his wife to death with a crowbar and reportedly hit her over the head 30 times at their home in Cheshire. And what sparked Pomfret's freakout was that she apparently made fun of his erectile dysfunction.
Oh.
And she would consistently tease him for, quote, not performing very well and for being limp and useless.
Oh, no.
Limp and effing useless in the bedroom. They were married for 22 years. And he finally snapped. Not that area. He finally snapped on his wife and killed her with the crowbar. And now he's going behind bars. He initially tried to deny that it was him, but then he admitted to being the one who killed his wife.
Tried to claim special defense of a temporary loss of control.
Special defense of a temporary loss of control? Is that real verbiage that they have in the ex-mother country?
Apparently so.
Is that like saying someone's mentally unstable after a mass shooting or something like that? They just kind of give you some verbiage that makes it seem like it's not as bad as what it actually is?
So the guy made some missteps here in his attempt to cover up the murder of his wife by beating her with a crowbar 50 times. That is just brutal.
30 times.
30 times, excuse me. Mm-hmm. After killing her, the computer expert had burnt his blood-stained clothes, disposed of the crowbar at a lake, and told police officers he was innocent. But he failed to destroy his socks, which were covered in blood. For some reason, he decided to keep the socks as a memento.
It's a lucky pair of socks, man. You can't lose those. Liverpool hadn't lost in months when he was wearing those socks. It's a lucky routine. He's not giving those away.
And the police say without the socks, there is no forensic evidence linking him to the scene. So
So he got rid of all the rest of the clothes, but he left the socks behind in the room?
Yep.
Got rid of the clothes. He got rid of the crowbar, but he left the socks. And because of that, he's going to jail for life. A Barclays Bank executive. This guy's a pretty big deal over there.
See, you're saying Barclays Bank exec. I'm seeing computer programmer.
We have two different stories.
What's the guy's? No, it's the same last
David
name.
David Pomfret. Perhaps David, he lied about his job, too.
David Pomfret.
A computer executive.
Oh, well, so he worked at Barclays as a computer executive.
There you go. Well, regardless, David Pomfret will finally do hard time.
Dude, that is the worst last name to say ever.
Pomfret?
Pomfret.
Sounds very English. Pomfret.
Would you like some tea and Pomfret?
Tea and crumpets for Mr. Pomfret, please. I would call this a pretty stiff punishment, my friend.
Come on.
And he will finally be doing hard time.
What? Is that necessary?
Well, the prisoners in jail also mock the ED. Every time he noodles around there in prison, he's going to have some bad flashbacks, huh? He did say he killed the woman he loved, so clearly there's some remorse right there.
Well, perhaps. Nope, not going there. Not going there.
All right, so there you go. There's today's Shooting the Bull story. A British Barclays Bank executive / computer guy for Barclays in England killed his wife by beating her with a crowbar because she had made fun of him for his erectile dysfunction. So don't just change the channel when you hear those ED commercials on our station. Give our guy Dr. Urakaki a call. Make sure you're taken care of so things don't go to that extreme in the bedroom.
You dig?
You dig?
Yeah. From the old Snoop Dogg commercials. For hymns?
Oh.
You dig?
That was the whitest thing you've ever said, my friend. That was terrible. Is that your Snoop Dogg impersonation? That's
no,
all you got?
No,
Sounded like it. You dig?
Let me try one more time. Oh, was that your Snoop
Dogg? No, that was me impersonating you impersonating Snoop.
You dig?
All right, we're getting out of here. Next thing I know, you're going to be shooting money guns into the stands at Allen Fieldhouse with strippers dancing around you.
I can't believe you were off the Monday and Tuesday after that weekend.
It's my favorite story of the sports year. No doubt about that. All right, there you go. There's Shooting the Bull brought to you by AV Consultations. It is midday with Trey and BK. We've got one segment to go, and it's Tuesday, which means it's our NFL roundup. We'll take a look at all of the action from week six of the NFL season, including what the hell happened to the refs last night in Lions-Packers. The Lions got absolutely screwed. How do we fix this? I'll propose a solution next.
NFL, oh, I miss you so. NFL, when you left, there was a hole deep in my soul. Now it is whole until Super Bowl.
Thank you, as always, to Manny Pacquiao for leading us into the final segment on Tuesdays.
We need to interview the Pac-Man and just ask him about that song. Only want a one-question interview with Manny Pacquiao. Just tell me about that song and how they got you to sing that.
How
you sing so damn well.
I haven't considered trying to reach out to Manny Pacquiao for that reason, but I will now.
Next time he's got a fight, we'll see if we can help promote it a little bit.
Final segment of Tuesday's show is not only the midday wrap-up, it's also the NFL roundup, and the wrap-up is always sponsored by Paul's Motorworks.
Yes, sir. Paul's Motorworks, 620 and 2222, the only place you need to go to get your car taken care of. Whether it's regularly scheduled maintenance or something is seriously wrong, Paul's Motorworks can save you time and money. Tell them I sent you, get 10% off. All right, Thursday night football. Took a while, but the Patriots won, and they covered against the lowly, very short-handed New York football Giants. 35-14, the Pats are 6-0. Does anyone in the AFC have a chance against these guys, Trey?
No, my goodness, their defense is fan-freaking-tastic.
No doubt about that. On this Sunday, the Carolina Panthers are 4-0 with Kyle Allen. Christian McCaffrey only had 31 yards rushing. It really was the Kyle Allen show on Sunday. They go into Tampa and beat the Bucs 37-26. How about five picks for famous Jameis Winston? Yikes.
Sacked seven times also. What does Carolina do when Cam Newton comes back? Because that's going to happen in the next couple of weeks.
I know what they should do, and they're not going to do it. Cam Newton's going to get that job back. Seahawks are 5-1. They go into Cleveland. Knock out the Browns. The Browns 2-4, 0-3 at home this year. Hell of a game, 32-28, the final score there.
Russell Wilson, the fourth quarterback in NFL history to start the year with six straight games of over 100 QBR. That's pretty good.
The game of the weekend, at least around these parts, the Houston Texans go into Kansas City, 31-24 over the Chiefs. Back-to-back home losses for KC. Worst game of the year in the NFL happened on Sunday, and it was actually pretty entertaining. The 0-5 Redskins get a win. They're now 1-5. They beat the Miami Dolphins, who are currently 0-5, 17-16. Dolphins had a two-point conversion for the win, and they blew it.
Kudos to the Dolphins for tanking that two-point conversion, by the way. I am convinced that they were trying to fail.
I'm not. I think they wanted to score there. They shouldn't have. I think they wanted to score there. I just think that's how bad of a football team they are. They couldn't execute. I thought they were going to take a QB kneel on that two-point conversion, just to take the L.
Ooh, that would have been something.
Awesome. That would have been awesome. The Vikings all over Philadelphia, 38-20. Kirk Cousins, since he was called out by Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen, he's balled out the last 2 weeks, 333 and four touchdowns, three of them to Stephon Diggs.
Hey, technically he gets a win over a team that was above 500 when he played them. Now, Philly's defense is really beat up, but credit Kirk Cousins for actually throwing it to his talented wideouts, including Stephon Diggs.
Eagles need to trade for Patrick Peterson of Arizona, who apparently is on the trade block. That seems like a match made in heaven right there. Teddy Two Gloves, Teddy Bridgewater, and the New Orleans Saints, 5-1. They go into Jacksonville. It was a defensive struggle, but the Saints win 13-6. Tip the cap to Teddy Bridgewater. He didn't have to do much this past week. It was more of a defensive game, but he has not lost.
keep an eye out on Alvin Kamara. He's dealing with an ankle injury right now. Really slowed him up versus Jacksonville. Hopefully for Saints fans, it's not something that lingers.
Ravens over the Bengals 23-17. Cincinnati is 0-6. They're finally going to draft the quarterback next year, right?
Hopefully so. Hey, remember when Lamar Jackson said that he didn't consider himself a running quarterback? He does it when he has to. Well, when he has to, he's pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. The 49ers are still undefeated. Them and New England, the last two unbeaten in the National Football League. The Niners go into Los Angeles and beat the Rams 20-7. Another strong defensive performance by San Fran and Jared Goff. I think the Rams have a serious problem with that dude.
Defense is the key to the 49ers and what they've been able to do so far this year. But you're right, BK. Membo Goff, he is not a great quarterback, and it certainly doesn't help when their O-line is dominated like they were by San Francisco.
31st ranked offensive line in the league. I don't know what happened, but they have lost it. The Rams are struggling. I said before the year they would not make the playoffs. They are currently 3-3, and they look like they're in some trouble.
You're looking good with that prediction right now. The Rams had two first downs in the second half. Two.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that is embarrassing. Hey, Cliff Kingsbury, Coach Bro. And Kyler Murray, Coach Bro and the Midget. What a band that would be. They beat the Atlanta Falcons 34-33. Matt Bryant, one of the best kickers in the history of this league, misses an extra point that would have tied the game with about 90 seconds left. Atlanta's 1-5. Dan Quinn's getting axed at some point, right?
Yes, he is. Arizona scored on their first five possessions, and Kyler Murray had a great day, including a career-high 3 touchdowns.
No doubt about that. Broncos over the Titans 16-0. Mariota got benched in this game for Ryan Tannehill. They both sucked. They couldn't score against Denver. Yikes.
Maybe the worst game of the entire season in the NFL, considering that between the two teams, they punted 17 times in that game.
That's less than I thought from watching that game, if we're being completely honest. That game sucked. Yes, sir, the Cowboys. Steelers on Sunday Night Football over the Chargers. What happened to the Chargers, man? They were down 24-0 in this game. Almost fight back, but they can't complete the comeback. They lose to Devlin Hodges in Pittsburgh. I guess at home, but it really felt like a Pittsburgh home game.
Oh, gosh.
In
there
Los Angeles.
Were far more Pittsburgh fans than there were L.A. Chargers fans. They need to move that team back to San Diego, please.
And then Monday Night Football, the referees over the Detroit Lions 23-22. Detroit got absolutely jobbed. A couple of hands-to-the-face penalties that called that weren't actual hands-to-the-face penalties. There was a pass interference that wasn't called that should have been on Green Bay. The Lions got jobbed. Green Bay ran a play with 13 guys on defense, and they didn't call a penalty for it. We need to check the bank accounts of the officiating crew of last night's game, please. That was a joke. Packers get the win. They are 5-1, but man, they didn't deserve it.
Utter screw job, and count me in as somebody who is really entertained by this Detroit football team this year. We were questioning just how good they were when they were undefeated at 2-0-1 after the first three games. It's going to be a competitive team the rest of the way.
They should be 4-1. Remember they had a touchdown called back at the end of their game against, who was it, the Falcons?
Yep.
Where the guy crossed the line, but they said he didn't, and they lost on the next play?
Philly, maybe?
Maybe. I can't remember. The Lions have gotten screwed twice. Can we get a ref in the booth to buzz down to the officials on the field whenever a call was missed so we can correct this, please? Who said we wanted more penalties? It's what we're getting.
Awful.
It's not working. The officiating is hurting the NFL product right now. All right, we're out of time. The Rodcast coming up next from 1 to 3. Chad and Kevin from 3 to 7. Thanks to all of you for texting and listening throughout the program. For the fantasy sports guru, the Marine, Adam Wagner across the glass, thank you for your service to this country and this show. For the Sultan of Cynicism, the Vomit King, the male, Amy Schumer, Trey Elling across the table, I am BK. We will be back to get a pop at the same time tomorrow. Until then, let bygones be bygones. You can go and get the hell on. You and your mama. We out of here.